Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 9, the most confidential knowledge, text number 15. Gyana jagnena chapyane ijanto mamupasate ekakdvena pritakdvena bahuda vishvatomukam. Jnana-jagnena, by cultivation of knowledge, cha, also, api, certainly, anye, others, ijantaha, sacrificing, mam, me, upasate, worship, ekaktvena, in oneness, pritaktvena, in duality, bahuda, in diversity, vishvataha mukham, and in the universal form. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord as the one without a second, as diverse in many, and in the universal form. Purport. This verse is the summary of the previous verses. The Lord tells Arjuna that those who are purely in Krishna consciousness and do not know anything other than Krishna are called Mahatma. Yet there are other persons who are not exactly in the position of Mahatma, but who worship Krishna also, in different ways. Some of them have been described as the distressed, the financially destitute, the inquisitive, and those who are engaged in the cultivation of knowledge. But there are others who are still lower, and these are divided into three. He who worships himself as one with the Supreme Lord. Two, he who concocts some form of the Lord and worships that. And three, he who accepts the universal form, the Vishwarupa of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, worships that. Out of the above three, the lowest, those who worship themselves as the Supreme Lord, thinking themselves to be monists, are the most predominant. Such people themselves think themselves to be the Supreme Lord, and in this mentality they worship themselves. Well, that's nice. Convenient. You always have your deity with you to worship. This is also a type of God worship. Well, they can understand that they are not the immaterial body, but are actually spirit soul. At least such a sense is prominent. Generally, the impersonalists worship the Supreme Lord in this way. The second class includes the worshippers of the demigods, those who, by imagination, consider any form to be the form of the Supreme Lord. And the third class includes those who cannot conceive of anything beyond the manifestation of this material universe. They consider the universe to be the supreme organism or entity and worship that. The universe is also a form of the Lord. So the verse text again. Jnana jagnena chapyanye yajanto mamupasate ekaktvena pritaktvena bahuda vishvatomukam. Others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord as the one without a second, as diverse in many, and in the universal form. Prabhupada writes in the purport, this verse is a summary of the previous verses. I have no idea what he's talking about. Can anyone explain how this is a summary of all the previous? It seems like a completely new idea. Anyhow, we don't always have to know everything. But basically speaking, as Krishna has said later on in the Bhagavad Gita, sattva nirupa sarvasya shraddha bhavati bharata shroma yo yo purusham yo yas charas eva saha, that according to one's position, I don't think the word is position, it's not even situation, it's chapter 12. One's existence under the three modes of material nature, under the various modes of nature, one evolves a particular kind of faith. The living being is said to be of a particular faith according to the modes he has acquired. In other words, we're all walking around with a certain type of consciousness. And by nature of illusion, we actually believe our consciousness is real. Whatever we're perceiving, we actually think we know what's going on. It's only when you come to a Hare Krishna class you get a little shaken up. They have the nerve to tell you you're an illusion. Of course, we never tell people like that when they come the first time. We tell people how wonderful they are. Then they think, well, this person actually knows something. We tell them we're an illusion, and they think this person knows nothing. Because basically speaking, everyone, for the most part, they go wherever their false ego can be massaged. And people have unlimited varieties of false ego, which change all the time. As their conception changes, their false ego changes. And the conception is according to the modes of material nature. And it just so happens, as soon as one does anything in the material world, under one mode of material nature, another mode of material nature evolves. Krishna says that in the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he goes over, actually, it's one of the, another strange set of verses in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna starts with the second verse and then goes to the first one. I never figured it out. But anyhow, Krishna says, Karmana sukritasya hu satvikam nimralam palam. It's 14:16. Karmana sukritasya hu satvikam nimralam palam rajasastu palam dukam agena tamasa palam satvam sanjayate gyanam rajaso lova evacha pramado moha tamaso bhavato gyanam evacha. Krishna starts the second verse. In other words, the second first conception comes second, and the second conception comes first, apparently. He says, the results of pious activity, action is pure, said to be in the mode of goodness, but action done in the mode of passion results in misery, and action performed in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness. And then he says, the next verse, from the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops, from the mode of passion, greed develops, from the mode of ignorance, develop foolishness, madness, and ignorance, and illusion. So they're both giving the results. One says the result of pious activity is pure, is said to be in the mode of goodness. The action done in the mode of passion results in misery, and action performed in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness. And from the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops. So if you act in the mode of goodness, then you get knowledge. If you act in the mode of passion, you get greed. If you act in the mode of ignorance, you develop foolish madness and illusion. So then Krishna says, but action done in the mode of passion results in misery instead of greed, and action performed in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness. So why Krishna said the same thing twice, I don't know. In any case, and so if one acts in goodness, you get two things. You get purity, and you get so-called real knowledge. Things become clearer. So goodness, Krishna has gone over goodness. For instance, to follow the scripture is goodness. Or, for instance, deva, dvija, guru, pragya, pujanam, socham, arjavam, Brahmacharyam ahimsam cha shariram tap uchite. That deva dvija guru pragya, worship of the devas, principally deva is Vishnu or Krishna, guru, the spiritual masters, deva dvija, the twice born, the Brahmins, Also, Dvija means birds, in case you want to worship birds, because birds are born twice. First, they're born as an egg, and then they hatch from the egg. So the birds are also Dvijas. So if you take birth as a bird, you automatically become twice born. But I don't think Krishna is referring to the birds here, but, except for Garuda. Deva, Dvija, Guru, Pragya, and the Pragya, the, this is the 17th chapter. Worshipable personalities. Pragya means intelligence. Pujanam, so worship of these persons, socham, arjumam, brahmacharyam. So cleanliness, simplicity, and celibacy, and ahimsa, and nonviolence. So if I act like this, we're acting in the mode of goodness, and therefore we should become purer, and we should develop knowledge. We see things differently. If one acts in the mode of passion, one gets two things, misery and greed. And if you act in the mode of ignorance, you get madness, illusion, and ignorance. Nice combination. And then one's perspective changes. In other words, one sees things differently and believes, everyone who's is under the modes of material nature more or less believes one's conception is real. One is convinced that I'm living in a reality. Well, actually, one is living in a dream, virtually a dream. A very expert dream put together by Krishna's energy, but it's nothing more than a dream. Not that dreams don't exist. Dreams are actually real in the sense that they're made of material energy, but they have nothing to do with ourselves any more than if you watch a superhero movie and actually believe you have superhuman powers because you're simply identifying oneself with the character. So we may believe we're this body, but it's just a dream. It's just another mental concoction. Now, to wake up from that dream is the whole purpose of Krishna consciousness. But there are different varieties of dreams we can have as we're waking up. And here are three other dreams. That text number 20. This is the 9th chapter. And it's text number 15. Yana jagnena chapyanye yidanto mamapasite ekatvena pritakvena pruhuda vishvato mukha. So these are three different states of consciousness. That the first one is the cultivation of knowledge. Knowledge meaning at least advancing towards a clearer conception of reality. So the first one Prabhupada mentions here is, well, he says that there are four other people working the Vanashram system, and they're actually becoming elevated also. In other words, even if you're a Shudra, if you follow the instructions of the higher authorities, then gradually you become a Vaishya. You come to the modes of ignorance and passion rather than just ignorance. And if you're a Vaishya, probably doing your duty, then you'll gradually come to the mode of passion and a little goodness as a Kshatriya. And if you're a Kshatriya and you follow the Brahmins, then eventually you become a Brahmin. And if you're a Brahmin, then you become self-realized, you realize you're eternal. So these are four kinds of people who approach Krishna. in the Varnashram system, but with some material desire, some alleviation gradually from material distress and gaining of material. Well, alleviation of distress means simultaneously becoming less uncomfortable or more comfortable in the material energy. And then there's here, number one, who thinks himself to be one, worships himself as one with the Supreme Lord. Means that we think that we're the most important person in the whole universe, which everyone thinks anyhow. There's no one in the material. If you had a vote, who's the most important person in the universe, we get around 8 million different votes. If people who voted, unless you get paid for your vote, then you might switch. And who concocts some form of the Lord. So Prabhupada says, equates this with demigod worships. Thinking that, yes, we'll worship the demigods. And then number three is those Ramonas, thinking themselves to be actually one with the Supreme Lord, that not only am I the most important person in the universe, but I am the universe. There's no competitor because I'm everything. The only thing is that somehow or another I fell asleep. For some reason or another, I forgot that I'm God, which is quite unusual. That God forgets. He's not a very good God. So these are another three types of consciousness, and people who have them, they actually believe them. As a matter of fact, most people actually believe that they are the center of the universe. You don't have to be taught that. Every living entity, even a mouse, thinks that I'm the most important person in the house. They think these people living in the house, the only good that they're doing is they're leaving me some cheese to eat once in a while. Otherwise, they're useless. At least I'm raising a nice family and we don't quarrel, but I live in this house, these people disturb us all the time. They're always shouting. We live peacefully here. Maybe they should move out and leave us in peace. No, a mouse actually thinks like that. He doesn't think, oh, I'm a lowly mouse. We're so fortunate to live in this house. I should be humble. I should leave them. Leave them a note of thanks for the cheese. Can't be greedy. No, everyone, whatever their position is, they think they deserve it. They think it's owed to them. They have as much appreciation as the mouse who's living in a house. And the second one, the demigods, they think the demigods, they worship the demigods, but only to get something from them. Because basically thinking that the demigods exist just to satisfy their desires. And as far as the final, the monas, well, at heart everyone would like to think that they're God, but they find little reason to think like that. They realize if I'm God, I don't seem to have much control around here. I just get kicked around all the time. I'm a pretty poor example of God. But some people are so crazy they actually think like that. If you ask them, can you move the sun and the moon if you're God? They said, I could. Well, can you do it? It's pretty cold around here. Well, I could, but I don't feel like doing it today. Well, if I come back tomorrow, will you do it? They can't do anything except for talking that they can do everything. But when we actually become liberated from material conception of life, then you actually think, then maybe I am God. Because after all, those who are actually on that platform, sometimes they have mystic powers and things like that. You can get really puffed up, thinking I'm really controlling things around here. Considering the extent that mystic powers can develop. Because mystic powers all come from Krishna. When we meditate upon Krishna, then due to that identification and or that association with Krishna, then our external energies become empowered. We may think we're a mystic yogi and we're doing things, but even the mystic yogis aren't really doing anything. It's all being done by Krishna's energy. But the energy that we're misidentifying ourselves becomes much more influential because of identification with Krishna. Just like we try to run, you can only run a few miles an hour or kilometers an hour. But if you're in an airplane, you can go so much faster. Now, you're not really doing anything to go faster. It's only because you're at one with the airplane that you're moving faster. So when we become one with Krishna, then this material energy, which we're situated under, becomes empowered by Krishna's association. And therefore, we can do wonderful things, all anima, lagnima, mahima, whatever. And because the soul is situated there in that particular energy, he can desire, and Krishna fulfills those desires because that's the karma of the situation he's under. But he has to get the reactions for it. If you destroy a universe, it's not a good idea. Even if you have the capacity to do it, you can get into a lot of trouble. One day you destroy a universe, the next moment you're an amoeba for the next 10 million years, 10 million births. So it's a big responsibility. As you go up the food chain, so to speak, therefore you get more and more responsibility. And if you misuse it, then you get more and more of a reaction too. Therefore you can go up and crash. The conclusion is, better not to think oneself to be the center of the universe. Better not to worship the demigods or some other more higher personality than ourselves to get some benediction. Better off not to think oneself God. The better, safest thing is to think oneself to be the servant of the servant of Krishna. And therefore, one can gradually get elevated, and it's unlikely that one will, even if one falls down, Krishna will still bring oneself back, and eventually one will not hopefully fall too much. And Krishna will pick one up eventually and bring one back again. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? If anyone has a solution to how this is a summary of all the previous verses, you can let me know. Yes.
So these souls who emerge into Brahman, effulgence of Krishna, they have mystic powers.
No, not in Brahmajyoti. While you're here. I mean, actually the soul never really, quote, gets mystic power here. It's not that at some point in time we become the controller of the universe. No, everything is controlled eternally by Krishna through his energies. All we can do is desire. We do nothing but desire here. Of course, in the spiritual world, desire is absolute. We desire something, it happens. Here, we desire something, Krishna has to fulfill it. So when one gets mystic, they don't know, the soul doesn't really get mystic power. He simply gets the opportunity to be in a body which has mystic power by Krishna's arrangement, because Krishna is controlling everything. And therefore in that particular body you have a certain karma where you're eligible by your desire to have a certain reaction or result in that body. And you may think, now I'm doing these things, but that's not you. Still being done by Krishna's energy, not by the soul. Soul is anadivat niragunadvat paramatmayam avyam sharira stopikuntiya nakaruti nanalipyate. Those who can see with the eyes of eternity can see that the soul is eternal, transcendental, and beyond the modes of material nature. Despite contact with the material body or Arjuna, he's neither entangled nor is he doing anything. So that applies for everyone, even Brahma. Is really not entangled, nor is he doing anything. But because he desired properly, and therefore acted properly, therefore he got the body of Brahman. So we merge in Brahman, we don't do anything there. There's nothing mystical to do there. Sit, you can look around, you can't even look around, you have no eyes to look around. You're just there as in Brahman. You don't even think about being in the material world anymore. You don't think about anything. You just think that you're there. Now we may think, well, this sounds pretty boring. And of course, after some billions of years, they do get bored. After billions of years, maybe Brahman, lifetimes. But we can't imagine how comfortable it is to be in Brahman. It's like, imagine it's freezing cold out in your room and you're in a nice warm bed. And it's so cozy. And someone says, well, can you get up? And you go, oh, no, just 5 minutes more. So Brahman is quite cozy. And time passes. But then after all, I get bored. And think, wow, anything going to happen around here? And then you're back in the material world again as soon as you think like that.
So this is more like material, like this, when material body develops more, then you get mystic powers. I mean, I'm just trying to understand, not that I want.
No, the soul, just like this body, has mystic power. You have mystic power already. Did you know that?
No.
If you cut your finger, it heals, right?
Yes.
That's mystic power.
Yes.
But how it's being done, it's not being done by you, the soul. It's being done by the material nature. So you get a body that can fly. Just like we have a body that can walk. You get a body, you don't even think about it, how I got it. You can just do it. You know how to do it. Because that's what Krishna gives. You're in that body, you have the intelligence. How to do it, Krishna gives the intelligence. But it's Krishna giving the intelligence. It's Krishna who supplied the body. It's the body, that this material nature, which is moving it. You're just identifying with it. And you may think, well, I'm so powerful, I can do this and that. Or you may think, actually, I'm not doing anything, nor am I entangled. I'm simply desiring to utilize this body in Krishna's service. Krishna's doing the rest. I mean, for an ant, we're supermen. They look at us and they go, wow. It must be a demigod. Where this creature come from, descended from a high. So it's for the demigods, those with mystic power, and for us, the demigods are, what, you know, amazing like that. But after a while, they get used to it also. They just take it for granted. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandaraj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.